We are continuing in our Revelation, the 11th chapter. I'll have us please read some of these verses again. And Brother David Vickery, could you read in chapter 11, could you read 3 through 7? And then Sister Roseanne, 8 through 13, please.
Chapter 11, 3 through 7. And I will give power unto my two witnesses, and they shall prophesy 1,260 days, clothed in sackcloth. These are the two olive trees and the two candlesticks standing before the God of the earth. And if any man will hurt them, fire proceedeth out of their mouth and devoureth their enemies. And if any man will hurt them, he must in this manner be killed. They have power to shut heaven, that it rain not in the days of their prophecy, and have power over waters to turn them to blood and to smite the earth with all plagues, as often as they will.
Now, and when they...
I'm sorry,
did you say 7 through 13 or 8 through 13? Forgive me.
Brother David Vickery, what was the last verse you read this on, sure?
6, Brother Rick.
All right, Sister Roseanne, go ahead and start with 7, please.
Okay, forgive me for that. Now when they finish their testimony, the beast that ascends out of the bottomless pit will make war against them, overcome them, and kill them. And their dead bodies will lie in the street of the great city, which spiritually is called Sodom and Egypt, where also our Lord was crucified. Then those from the peoples, tribes, tongues, and nations will see their dead bodies 3.5 days and not allow their dead bodies to be put into graves. And those who dwell on the earth will rejoice over them, make merry, and send gifts to one another, because these two prophets tormented those who dwell on the earth. Now after the 3.5 days, the breath of life from God entered them, and they stood on their feet, and great fear fell on those who saw them. And they heard a loud voice from heaven saying to them, come up here. And they ascended to heaven in a cloud, and their enemies saw them. In the hour there was a great earthquake, and 1/10 of the city fell. In the earthquake, 7,000 men were killed, and the rest were afraid and gave glory to God of heaven. I'm sorry about that.
No, it's all good. It's all fine. Okay. Thank you both. So, as you recall, we had sent out a 3-page, 3 pages of copy or type, and 1 page with a graphic, like a chart, regarding 1,260 years and some of the various aspects of that. And so we had left off last week. We had read over and considered the points of the first page and most of the second page, and we were going to continue on. We had discussed the various primarily 2, and then a third view was being introduced, which is fine, regarding the 1,260 years. And particularly when the 3.5 years, that 3.5 day, a day for a year, 3.5 years in which the two witnesses, the Old and New Testament, lay dead in the streets and wouldn't be buried. When does that fit in? And so that's, we had a good discussion last week. We're going to continue it. Let me just ask before I get started saying more, did anyone want to comment on what was covered last week? Ruth?
What's the name of the file you sent out?
What's the name of the file?
Somehow mine disappeared and I'm looking for it and I don't.
Well, I can look for that. Just give me a moment. Takes me a second.
Wasn't it some questions each need to harmonize?
Yes.
Yeah, I'd have to minimize my screen with all of you to try to search for it. So,
Okay, thank you. I'll find it. Thank you.
I have the name of it.
Okay.
It's Revelation 11, some questions each need to harmonize and or at least be familiar.
I just emailed it to you. You're yahoo.com, right?
Yeah, but I'm not at my computer. I found it on Rick's computer. Oh. Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. There's something in the Sister Wincy. Thank you once again. I could just see you there with two twins in each arm and your foot on the computer, keyboard, and you're listening and you're sending us what we need. Faster than the rest of us without two kids. All right. Thank you. Very good. Okay. That's where we were. Again, I probably sound like a broken record, so bear with me. And that is that the main thing for us brethren is in the purpose of this study is to expose ourselves and familiarize ourselves with the book of Revelation, this chapter 11, parts of it, not all of it, but the parts that we are considering, have more of a challenge to it, in part because there's a relationship to the Revelation 17th chapter, which, Brother Russell himself said was a challenge to understand. But nonetheless, you don't have to draw a conclusion, based on this study. If one can, all well and good. And if you have, there are fine brethren who have different understandings of these verses, which makes it, a bit more of a challenge. But nonetheless, part of the crux of the matter, I was introducing what I'm calling two views because there are brethren that attend this meeting. That I know that there are at least two different views that are generally understood. And so those are the ones we were addressing. Brother Chris introduced a third view last week, which is also popular from the, Brother David Duran and the brethren, some of the brethren in Louisville on their notes. It's a third view. There's relationships to one of the two views, that we were entertaining. But I hadn't focused on including it, mainly because I didn't know if anyone here held that view. So I didn't try to accommodate them. And, of course, there's even more than two or three views, on this. So we'll just let it be. Now, let me take a moment to say, is anyone hearing or being bothered by my air conditioner at our home air conditioner running? All right, good. I turned down my volume, so perhaps maybe that'll help with you at your end because some have said that was a little overwhelming. But okay, if it becomes a nuisance, tell me. We'll just turn it off for the study. All right. So back to where we were. If I was to say in a nutshell that the three views, one view is that the 1260 years of the two witnesses in sackcloth would be from not a direct starting event, but somewhere about 300, a little earlier, late 200s AD, and continues down to the beginning of the Great Reformation period and the advent of many, over 23 Bible languages in the common people's language being printed and distributed and that there was a specific war by the papacy against the Bible during the beginning of that Reformation period, but the Bible ended up rising from that. That makes the 1260 years of the two witnesses in sackcloth separate from the 1260 years of the church's experience from 539 AD to 1799 AD of being in the wilderness. And then that's probably one of the bigger problems for brethren to have. But one of the views of keeping the 1260 years the same period for the two witnesses in sackcloth, as well as the church's experience, that is, the 1260 year period being from 539 to 1799. The one view that we have been presenting was that the 3.5 years of the death of the two witnesses follow 1799, when the two witnesses had finished their testimony. Then they were slain. And that would be from 1800 to 1804, and then the British and Foreign Bible Society came into existence in 1804, and then the Bibles came out inexpensively and plenteously to all who wanted. So there was that view. But then the third view being introduced from the Louisville Brethren was that in fact it's not after the 1260 years are finished of these two witnesses prophesying, but rather about when they were finishing. So near the end of the 1260 years, the same starting date of 539 AD, the ending date being the 1799, same 1200 year period for the two witnesses with the church's experience. But that 3.5 year of the death of the two witnesses and them lying in the street would begin in 1793 and last for 3.5 years. And so it wasn't after the testimony was finished, but about finishing or when finishing. And so there was that third view. So with that, we're going to move forward. We're going to continue this discussion, and we'll see, we'll just keep adding more information for each of us to consider, and then we'll discuss it more. Does anyone think I didn't represent those three very fairly? You're probably not raising your hand because of that question, but James or Molly?
There we go. Trying to lower my hand and unmute myself. Sorry. I just had I'm certainly not throwing this out there as a very well researched or thought out. But when you mentioned the former view, the first view that you were speaking of this morning, with you said around 300 AD, right, to the Reformation. There's an interesting period of 1260 years from 303 AD, which was Diocletian's order to burn all Bibles. And 1260 years later is 1563, which the Council of Trent in the Catholic system, Roman Catholic system, determined that the Latin Vulgate was the premier or sole scripture to be trusted. So just throwing it out there, it's an interesting period of time that it'd be exactly 1260 years and that the Bible would be in sackcloth. So that kind of mourning show, but there is no 3.5 years after that. I have no idea what happened in 1567. So I don't think it necessarily would work, but just possible evidence to corroborate with that idea that it was around 300 AD to the Reformation. Over.
Oh, I very much appreciate that. I was unaware of that Diocletian order to burn Bibles. That we all remember, brethren, that when we studied the second stage of the church, the Smyrna stage back in Revelation, the second chapter, there was a 10-year period of severe persecution of Christians, and that was under Diocletian, 303 to 313. And then when Constantine converted and gained power in the Roman Empire, that ended that period. So very fascinating. Brother James, is that a hand again?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Sister Molly, help me. That I did look up. Something did happen in 1567, which was significant. And it was the Second War of Religion, they call it, which was in France. And that was with the Huguenots, I believe, where they did wage war against Protestants. I think it was 20 million people involved in that. So it was, you know, a pretty extensive war that went throughout France, and I'm a little rough on the history, but I think it was when they all fled then up to to Normandy and those Scandinavian countries. Over.
Oh, very fascinating. We'll look at that more. Very good. Yeah, the Huguenots were French. Very good. Thank you. Very helpful. Very helpful. Other comments so far? Okay. So, if we just pick up with reading on the bottom of page 2, let's say, well, let me say this about that. I see now a little better. If you look on page 1 at number 5, that's probably a more intelligent way of doing this. I'm just going to read that little paragraph at number 5, page 1. In verses 7 through 11, we need to consider a number of symbols to help us decide if the 1260 years of the two witnesses prophesying in sackcloth is from 539 AD to 1799 AD period, or sometime about 300 AD to sometime about 1500 AD. And so then we picked up after that. We discussed about when they finished their testimony. Is the beast that ascended out of the bottom place shall make war against them, shall overcome and kill them. Point B. Point C, talking about what being in the bottomless pit might represent. Point D, the dead bodies lying in the street of the great city. And maybe we'll just pick up there with that point D. But that gives us a little background of these various symbols we are just considering in part right now. So, let's see there. Sister Connie, could you read on page 2 that point D, please?
Their dead bodies lie in the street of the great city. Either the street of the great symbol, a city, is symbolic or spiritual Babylon. Christendom, and in particular the Roman Empire under the influence of papacy during the 1500s, or it is the 10th part of the city during the French Revolution, as expressed in Revelation 11:13.
Okay. Any opening comments, Sister Connie?
No.
Okay. Well, with the mic open there, Brother Dan, we'll just ask you, did you have any opening comment on this point?
Just the observation as brought out here, our choices or decision we have to make by looking at this and the surrounding scriptures is, what is this city? Is it the city or Babylon represented by the papacy, which would be it would be the European nations, or is it the 1/10 of the city represented by France, which would would be the view from 539 to 1799, as opposed to the about 300 to somewhere in 1500. So I think the surrounding verses will have to be collated, for lack of a better word, with this for us to personally understand what makes the most sense. Over.
All right. Thank you. Well said, Brother Dan. And so just for emphasis, this point D is just stating that the symbol in verse 8 of the dead bodies lying in the street of the great city is lying in the street of the great city. Is that during the Reformation period, as it were, the 1500s with Europe and the British Isles? Or is that great city, the street of the great city of that verse, is that during the French Revolution, confined to France? And in our verse 13, it tells us symbolically that the French Revolution is only a tenth part of the city. So that's something each of us would want to consider in trying to put this together. Okay. Does that elicit a comment, that point, those points? Ruth?
Well, just honing in on that, the great city, which spiritually is called Sodom in Egypt, where also our Lord was crucified. So that would be obviously part of our discussion, like, what's the great city, Sodom in Egypt? Is that France and the French Revolution, or is that the great city, Babylon, which also would have crucified our Lord, I'm thinking, in regard to the Mass. So, over.
Very good. So, you're right. And that's part of this, that verse 8. Is it more inclusive, but these additional expressions in verse 8, are they inclusive of Christendom on the larger level, including papacy, or would this be revolutionary France, which are basically atheists? And that didn't seem to fit well as Ruth's point. Okay, so, and we're going to go back over these verses, and we'll pull it all together. Okay, other comments on this so far? All right, and then, well, Dan?
Connie, just read a comment from the comments book that might be interesting to put in play, and this is from verse 8 here that we read. Go ahead.
Oh, under called Sodom, it says, Lot's wife, after starting to flee as directed, looked back, coveting the things behind. So it is with some now fleeing from Babylon. And that's from the fourth volume, page 608.
In the great city, he has Babylon as well, from the same reference in the sixth volume, in the fourth volume, 608.
Okay, thank you. All right, good. All right. So then let's see here. Brother Jeff, do you have these notes in front of you? Okay. Sister Cheryl, could you read for us, letter E, please?
For 3.5 days, that is years, their bodies are not allowed to be buried. That is the Bible is publicly humiliated for a 3.5 year period after the 1260 years are complete. Following are two options, and undoubtedly there are thoughts on this. There are other thoughts on this.
All right, so Sister Cheryl, just on that point, what are we thinking about here on this point?
Well, first of all, I'm sorting my thoughts because I can see both ways. Then I thought you said B when Sister Connie wrote, and it was D, so I was catching up on what we're talking about. But here we know the 3.5 days are symbolic of 3.5 years. that would take place after the 1260 years are complete. So we're further investigating which period this would be, this 3.5 years. And that's as far as I can give thoughts on. Thank you.
All right, very good. What about, brethren, the symbol here of their bodies lying in the street, not allowed to be buried? Just what does that itself alone, not even concerned about when it took place, what does that symbol suggest to us? Sister Molly.
Thinking if someone isn't allowed like a proper burial, it's kind of they're dishonored in a sense. They're not given a proper symbol of rest, I guess. They're not honored in death.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. So true. Ruth.
I was thinking of that event. I don't have the reference, but where Saul and his sons were hung up publicly after they were killed in battle. I think it was it by the Philistines or whoever conquered them, and they were not allowed to be buried. And then the Israelites went and took them down and buried them. But it was a sign of victory for the enemy, that they were victorious over these enemies. Over.
Yes, very good. Very good. It's not uncommon, even in some wild places today, without trying to remember exactly where, but even today, it's not unusual for the corpse of someone who was despised when they're overthrown, defeated, or captured, to be dragged through the streets with the victors rejoicing. And it's a public humiliation, as said. It's even done today in some barbaric places and situations. But so this is the Bible. This is the Old and New Testament, the Bible, that for a 3.5 year period is being publicly despised, not allowed to be properly buried. You know, it's kind of interesting too, isn't it, that refresh my memory, someone knows better, but don't the Jewish people have and I think the Muslims as well, don't they have a sort of I don't know if requirement's the best word, but don't they have a practice of burying their dead rather immediately after their death? Am I thinking of that right? All right. Okay. So this is like the opposite of that. Okay. Well, we won't belabor that. I think the friends are all clear on that, this aspect of what this symbol represents. Let's look at Brother Chris. Could you read for us that point number one, please?
This period of time is from sometime in 1799 or 1800 and continues 3.5 years till an early British and Foreign Bible Society in 1804. Note that the war is after the 1260 years is over, that this is the same as the 3.5 years of lying dead in the street.
Okay. Opening comment on that, Brother Chris?
Well, there's no question about those 3.5 years being in that time period. I don't think it fits very well historically with good documentation. The lying dead in the streets, I think the thoughts that the friends have given are probably the best answer, but the earlier verses and the ones after, it seems like I was thinking possibly that they were lying dead in the streets because they weren't allowed to be buried because of the conflict between two kinds of people, those that could not give up the Bible and those that wanted it to be put in the grave for good. Hence the partying of sending gifts and everything to one another, but just for what it's worth, over.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Brother Chris. Any other comments on this point number one? Oh, okay. Just one view of when this 3.5 year period of lying dead in the street, this war and lying dead in the street. The, I'm going to call it 1800 to 1804. That would be one of the thoughts. Let's see here. Sister Alice, can you read point number two, please?
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
This period of time is from the first purchased for public burning of the English New Testament by papacy on November 23rd, 1526, until the last purchased for the public burning of the English New Testament by papacy on May 24, 1530, exactly 3 years and 182 days, or 3.5 years. This period of time was corroborated by historical records suggested by Brother Frank Shalhoub.
Okay, thank you. Any opening comment on that, Sister Alice?
I'm wondering if this is what... I don't remember if somebody was just mentioning this. Was this in regards to the... No, not the Huguenots. No, I better not say anything. I'm not real sure.
Okay. That's fair enough. Okay. Thank you. Brother Chris.
Yeah, I was just going to add, between the two views, this, you sent out, we've gone over, you've demonstrated, excellent, documentation as well that, you know, the overwhelming amount of, historical evidence of, Bible translations that have come out, as well as what you're bringing out here of, documented history that supports it quite well. Over.
Oh, okay. Thank you. All right. Yes. I appreciate that, Brother Chris. I actually, you know, for myself over the years, does someone else have their hand up? Okay. Over the years, when I first came into the truth, believe it or not, I attended what's called an ad hoc meeting. It was organized by the Brethren of the Old Northwest Detroit class, which was no more long ago. But nonetheless, on their Friday night study, they were studying in the Book of Revelation when I came along. And I wanted to attend all the meetings. And I was probably a real pain in the neck to the Brethren because I was constantly calling on the telephone to different ones throughout the week and the weekend. I had questions. I kept bugging them and I was probably very, very wearisome. And, you know, after the meetings, I wouldn't go home until it was like, I didn't pick up the social cues like, hey, time for us to go to bed. This is new to you, but we've been studying this for years. Take a break. But nonetheless, through all of that, I have to say that ad hoc meeting favored more this view on the interpretation of this 3.5 years, that it was the papacy as that beast attacking the Bible during the Reformation, and that same beast, the papacy, as a church and state will appear in the future for a final attack against the feet members of Christ and the truth. And so over the years, I've had that as something that I had been introduced to originally, but I know that doesn't make something so. We all believed a lot of things that we had to give up when we came to the truth, right? So we all can say, oh yeah, I know what it's like to believe something, and just because I believed it for so long didn't make it right. But over the years, many fine brethren that I really appreciated, like Brother Gene Burns and Ken Rawson and others, they held the view that this was taking place in relationship to the French Revolution and had something to do at the end of the 1260 years. And out of my respect for them and realizing that they're older than me and I'm not going to have to create a big debate over this, even though they knew I had a different view, I didn't speak on it, even though I spoke on other areas of the revelation, and I didn't push it. But when you go verse by verse through the book of Revelation, like we are now, you do have to present what you think. But you don't have to make anyone else think it. And I'm not trying to. But I do like to present an argument as logically and as clearly as possible for why I think something. But I certainly respect other views on this. When I came to this point of this view, I thought Brother Frank, in his book on the keys of Revelation, he has about a 7-page appendix on these very verses that we're considering. And in that, he gave historical records that I could look up. Well, some I had at home, like D'Aubigné's History of the French Revolution. I could look it up and read for myself these events on these dates and what was happening and things surrounding it. And the point of the, for example, quoting or citing D'Aubigné's History of the History of the Reformation. He wasn't commenting on Bible verses. It's not a commentary. He's a historian, and he's just recording the history of what had been taking place from letters and accounts, Fox's Book of Martyrs records, and all these various things. So you're just reading, and how you want to interpret it, that's up to you. Whereas when I was looking at the other brethren's interpretation, that this 3.5 years followed after 1799. It's very nice that it ends 3.5 years later from 1799 to 1804, but there didn't seem to be any war taking place against the Bible, with the Bible lying dead in the streets during that 3.5 year period. The French Revolution had ended. But before the French Revolution had ended, the more we read on the citations and quotes and histories, Christianity and religion had already been freely allowed in France during the period of the French Revolution. There was a very short year, 1 year and 4 month window when the churches were closed. 1 year and 4 months. Then the council of the French Revolution, after the death of Robespierre, they allowed the churches to open again. They released some of the priests from prison, and they allowed for public worship. So I didn't have a 3.5 year specific war against the Bible in France from 1793 to, 1777. Just didn't have it. Didn't have a 3.5 year period there. And so that being said, that didn't satisfy what to me was the critical point of the chapter. The critical point of this chapter, of the verses we're considering, is not when the 1260-year period began of the two witnesses on a specific year, but it's all about when it ends. Because then you have this 3.5 year period. And that's what we want to be able to identify. That seems to be what these scriptures are emphasizing. So for me to say I don't have an exact beginning date of the 1260 years, I have an approximate date, but really that was Brother Russell. And we read about that early on. I wanted you to see that this was Brother Russell's, was allowing for it as a view. Not saying it was his only view, because it wasn't, by no means. But he allowed for it. We do know that the Bible went into the dead language of Latin. We know that by the time of the Great Reformation, it was hardly in the dead languages anymore because of all these Bible translations. When we do have this period where the Bible was publicly humiliated in the streets of England, in London, with the papal bishops in England specifically purchasing William Tyndale's New Testament in English in order to publicly burn them, which they did. There were many other Bible burnings. They were confiscating, going door to door, confiscating Bibles throughout England, and then they were burning them locally. But the last publicly purchased, the last purchased Bibles for public burning was on May 24th of 1530, exactly 3 years and 182 days later, even counting the days of the months. So that seemed to fit. And these are the wrestlings with what actually, each one of us has to sort. So I just put that out there at this point. We'll continue to discuss more of these symbols. And like I said, you know, let each of us be convinced for ourselves, or at least be familiarized with the views. Sister Debbie.
Just a question. A lot of times in the scriptures, there's more than one fulfillment of prophecy. Sometimes it's like a spiritual fulfillment and then a literal fulfillment. Or, you know, could this maybe apply to two different situations equally, and both could apply just as, you know, well, equally, like I said, over?
Well, there are times where things like that do happen in scripture, double application. That's true. Personally, I don't see it here because, for myself, I could see an interpretation that even though some points are stronger and some points are weaker, I could see an application to one view that, you know, I'm primarily suggesting, but the other views just seem weak to me. So I can't say that they would both be equal, but maybe to someone else's mind, that's okay. Was there another comment, Sister Debbie?
Yeah, I just had one more question on point two. When you have these dates, how can we corroborate these dates? It says it's suggested by Brother Frank Shalhoub, but I'd really personally like to have the references because, you know, if I do a search of the internet, I can't find anything on it. It's like my internet got shut down when I tried to look up the November 23, 1526 date. So I'm just wondering if there's any actual corroboration of where he got these dates. Over.
Well, there is, and I'll provide them next week. If you don't have his writings, that's okay. I'll provide that next week. Sister Cheryl.
For me, when I'm, you know, conflicted with my view on what I'm studying, my mind automatically goes to, well, then how would you explain it to somebody? So for me, the challenge is, you know, the consistency of the symbols. You know, we want to keep the beast the same, it seems, in the 1260 year period that we've learned what we think it is, especially from Revelation 12, 6, I think it is. So is there a way, you know, with that question, that you're making it two different periods, but the same 1260 years? I'm not sure how I would ever explain that to somebody to be, that I'd sound like I had half a mind. Over.
Well, have you ever had to explain the two 6,000-year periods? You know, in the second volume and the third volume, Brother Russell has to do that, doesn't he?
Yeah, true.
He's got to explain. We got 6,000 years on our chronology from the creation of Adam, but we also have a 6,000-year period from the entrance of sin and death that we use for our Jubilee reckoning. Right?
Yeah, no, that's very true. That's very true. It just seems like, you know, the 1260, as you've studied over the years, it's so cemented in. We can see, you know, the picture with Elijah and prove that aspect to ourselves. And now this is taking on a whole different, which I can see the 1500s. I could see why it would be so. But the 1260 years, now it's having a different application. So I'm having a real struggle with trying to harmonize that.
Well, that's, I think that's probably the leading issue for many brethren is just, on that very point. So it's not unusual. That's the part where, the view that somehow this ends about the French Revolution is appealing to most. But then you have to change, you have to adopt a number of things. Plus you have to come up with accurate historical confirmation of your 3.5-year dead body period and war period, to really make it most convincing. But it can be a challenge. We grant that for sure. But if someone's going to, you know, I would never bring out the second 1260-year period unless I was trying to explain Revelation 11. All the years I spend my time explaining the 1260 years for the church's experience in the wilderness from the first two verses here, then in Revelation 12, then back in Daniel 12, that's all having to do with the church's experience. But this is the two witnesses. This is the Bible experience. So, anyway, it's okay. Ruth.
Well, just for my own information, I'm wondering, the brethren who present this view on the 1804 with the Bible Society, is there an event that takes place starting in 1800 and then going throughout this three and a half? Do they present one? I haven't read their notes, but do they present an event that took place throughout these 3.5 years, or just anyone who has this view? I'd like to hear. I just don't know. It's an honest question. Over.
I checked Brother Gene's notes, and I did not find any event there. That was one of the things that over the years that you got a nice ending event with the British and Foreign Bible Society starting. We got an exact day for that, month and day. It was formed, and that's beautiful. But I don't have anything starting 3.5 years earlier regarding a war against the Bible and the dead bodies laying in the streets and the merrymaking from 1800 to 1804. Freedom of religion was restored in France, and lo and behold, even the Pope was reinstated and the Inquisition office, because Napoleon wanted to be an emperor of the Roman Empire. So he had the Pope present at his coronation. He didn't let him coronate him, but he had him present. I didn't have a date on that on myself. Sister Debbie.
There it goes. I know you mentioned this before, and I forgot. Why is this an actual three? No, never mind. Let me leave it alone. Okay.
Well, just in chapter 11, again, just that verse 7, this beast makes war against the two witnesses, overcomes them and kills them. And then in verse 8, their dead bodies lie in the street of the great city, spiritually called Sodom and Gomorrah, where the Lord was crucified. Verse 9, people, kindreds, tongues, and nations shall see their dead bodies 3 days and a half and shall not suffer their dead bodies to be put in graves. I'm skipping down to verse 11. And after 3 days and a half, the spirit of life of God enters into them. So we have this 3.5-day period mentioned twice, and a day for a year. So it'd be symbolic of 3.5 literal years. All right. Brother Dan.
Well, you already said this, but that was exactly what came to my mind in connection with Sister Cheryl's question that, you know, in my simple mind, we're talking about two different subjects, if you will. The first two verses of Revelation 11 are talking about the common 1260-year period of the persecution of the church by the papacy. They had that power, and it was broken in 1799. It began in 539. We're all very familiar with that. But then we have to determine, well, is this the same subject, starting with verse 3? Are we talking about the church here? And, of course, as we've been discussing, we see it's not talking about the church, but it's talking about the Old New Testament, the Bible. And it's very, it makes, I think we can all see it in the symbolism that in sackcloth and ashes means, you know, death comes to mind and what happened to the Bible. You know, it was in dead languages. It was kept from the people. And so what period of time was that is the question we have to answer in our mind. What's the most fitting? So, to try to explain to somebody that this 1260-year period, you know, can be looked at two different ways, you know, might be misleading, because we have to say, is it the same 1260-year period of time? That's what we have to determine in our mind. And for me, it makes more sense when we look at what happened to the Bible, that it's more fitting that this period of time began earlier than 539, because when they first started to meet and determine what the truth was, they stopped looking to the Bible for the truth. They started looking to men and what they came up with in their meetings, if you will. So they were studying what these bishops were saying were the truth, and that the people didn't need to look to God anymore because they were going to interpret God and interpret the Bible. So when, you know, that began the period of sackcloth and ashes, the dead languages, Latin, the people didn't read and didn't understand, and so they had to rely upon what was told to them. Over.
All right, thank you, Brother Dan. Good comments. And as you were speaking, this we've all been saying this all along here, but let me just put it maybe very plainly. The story of this 1260 years, it's not the story of the church. It's the story of the two witnesses of God, the Old and New Testament. What happened to the Bible? It was in sackcloth. The church wasn't in sackcloth. The two witnesses were in sackcloth. So the two witnesses, when were they in sackcloth? Well, the dead language of Latin. That happened before 539. When was it out of sackcloth? In the Great Reformation, when all these Bible translations came forth in the language of the common people, and when papacy itself printed their English version of the Bible in the 1500s. So then we say, can we identify a specific 3.5 year war against the Bible by the beast, if it's the papacy, and where they were publicly humiliated? And we're saying we can in that 1526 to 1530 with these papacy purchased New Testaments, of William Tyndale to be publicly burned in humiliation. That's the suggestion. But the Bible was being attacked and destroyed by papacy throughout Europe at that time as well. But, okay. Let's then move into point F. And, let's see here. Brother Mark Candle, could you read point F for us, please?
Can you hear me now?
Very well.
Yeah. I had two browsers trying to get on at the same time and they blocked everything. I don't know where I'm at now, but I'm one of them. Okay, F. They that dwell on the earth shall rejoice over them and make merry, because these two prophets tormented them that dwelt on the earth. Those that dwell on the earth is usually interpreted as meaning those under religious restraint, that is, so-called Christians. Again, there are at least two possibilities. One, that this represents nominal Christians after the French Revolution is over, after 1799, and that are rejoicing in the humiliation of the Bible. Two, that this represents nominal Christians, Roman Catholics, that are rejoicing at the humiliation of the Bible by being publicly burned.
So, Brother Mark, any opening comments on this here, and these at least several views?
Well, I got to admit, I had never heard of this second view before, until someone said it was tied in with Frank Chaloux. And then I'm starting to think of, I don't know where his references were either. You know, unfortunately, the brethren that may have discussed this, like they used to have those joint ecclesia meetings where they'd have one question, you'd have elders from Staten Island and New Brunswick and Patterson discussing that one question. I do remember you said how hard it is to convince others. Well, I think Brother Frank Chaloux had a hard time convincing others too, because this would come up and he would have a difficult time in answering these questions. Although he did have this one statement once, and he said that when you have studied this topic as long as I have, you'll come to the same conclusion. Well, that isn't exactly the answer, but I remember that answer. And Brother Ken Wade came over to the press one day when I was working there, and he said, "Do you have any keys to Revelation?" I said, "No." That Chicago would not stock that book, and because it has to go through subcommittee, and they decided not to. But then on the other hand, Rush Chaloux has the supply of them, and he wants to, that's what Ken Wade said, is that he wants to control where these books go to. And I'm thinking now as we're talking about this, the idea of burning books so that others can't read them. Well, he didn't want that to happen. I'm just thinking along that line that, to have control over any piece of literature, the best thing is to be the source of it. And I think that may have been what the Catholic Church wanted to do to some extent. But it's very hard to have control of any book, because somebody will eventually end up printing their own copy of it or making their own changes in it. And so I don't know if it would be point one or point two in this point F as to who would, how they were handling it. I still favor the view that if you want to control a book, you would try to get as many copies as possible off the market to control that book. But if you want to avoid having someone else control that book, you keep printing it, regardless of what the other people think. And I think that somewhere in between there is the answer here. But that's all. Over.
Okay. No, but thank you, Brother Mark. And yes, and in fact, there's a third view as we'll talk about as well. But yes, this is this question. Those that dwell on the earth who have been tormented by these two witnesses are then, and during this 3.5 year period of the two witnesses lying dead in the street, are rejoicing over them. So this is how in our mind we have to analyze who is it that dwells on the earth that would fit this description during this 3.5 year period. At the end of the 1260 years. Okay. So, couple of hands here. Sister Debbie?
Yeah, looking at one and two, I know you brought it out before that one would be kind of hard to go with because the citizens of France, let me call it that, the citizens of France, whether they were nominal Christians, you know, well, they probably all were, but they weren't rejoicing over the Bible being humiliated more than they were rejoicing over royalty, nobility, and the Pope being humiliated. They were more interested in the humiliation of papacy, you know, because they were killing nobility and they were killing priests. You know, anybody that didn't have rough hands, rough working hands, they were going to the guillotine. So I don't think it was the Bible that they were sending to the guillotine so much as it was papacy. Anyway, that's my thought. Over.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Do I see another hand? Okay, so the French Revolution is a bit tricky. A few years ago, the Hope Convention that's going on this weekend, but a few years ago, they had given me an assignment on during the French Revolution, what took place with the clergy and the church in France, and how might that be a precursor. The final end time, situation, of the people reacting against the nominal church on a much larger scale, which we believe is factual. Nonetheless, in the French Revolution, when I studied on it back then on what happened to the clergy, the clergy was mainly persecuted in the larger cities of France because the clerical offices, bishops, archbishops, cardinals, the corrupt ones wanted these powerful positions in the big cities where they were entertained by royalty. And they were very corrupt. They were very wealthy. They lived high off the hog and they were buying and selling their offices and, they were hand in hand with the aristocracy and the wealthy merchants in these bigger cities, Paris, Lyons, and elsewhere. Whereas in the villages and the rural parts of France, the lowly priests were much more sympathetic to the common people. They were much more, they knew them personally. They were at the christenings of the babies. They were at the funerals of the farmers' families, and they were poor. Like, that was a poor priest parish. So when you read in the French Revolution, the clergy that was primarily persecuted and cast down were those who had been united with the aristocracy. Whereas the lowly priests and such that were out in the rural areas were mainly left alone because they were sympathetic with the people. They were trying to get them what food they could during their hard times. And when you read now, again, when we read about this, in this setting of what we're considering about the Bible, we come to learn that in the rural areas that the people had white priests. They called them white priests. They were priests that they were conducting the services in secret, and the people were attending them. The churches were locked up in the big cities and even in the smaller areas, but the people would meet clandestine to practice. But the Bible itself was rejected by the atheistic Robespierre and others who wanted a supreme being of reason. And they tried to introduce a whole nother set of religious days because they recognized people need something to try to give them morality. Because the reign of terror during the French Revolution was horrific, especially in the big cities, ridiculously horrific. So Robespierre was trying to create some kind of a religious atmosphere. Because it was the lack of morality, they were so barbaric that they needed something. They recognized it didn't work. So after the churches were locked shut, in 1793, there is an exact date in 1793, a year and 4 months later, they were opened again throughout France. So in my mind, like I say, there's two problems. One, it didn't follow after the 1260 years were finished, but nearing the finish, that it wasn't a full 3.5 years that religion was shut down in France during the French Revolution. And that the earth that was rejoicing wouldn't be nominal Christians. The earth that was rejoicing would be an atheist religion. In my mind, it doesn't fit well. They seem more like a C-class to me once you're atheist. But nonetheless, there's an interpretation that interprets that this atheist religion on reasoning would be this earth class. But to some minds, that'll appeal. But you got to do something with that earth, one way or the other. That's a symbol we have to work with. And so that's actually, two of the views, the earth rejoicing over the death of the Bible from 1800 to 1804, you can read in Brother Gene's notes, Sharon Garlick sent that out in mass to the whole class in the past. You remember she sent that out in the email. So you can, if you downloaded it back then, you could access that. I love Brother Gene. I've been greatly blessed. He was a mentor, but on that, his notes just didn't appeal to me. It didn't seem to answer it for me. But if you take a look if you like, of course. All right. Anything else on this so far here? All right. Let's keep moving a little bit more, here. Sister Molly, could you read for us item, G, please?
A related point is that in verse 13, there is a great earthquake, and the tenth part of the city fell. This is usually interpreted to be the French Revolution, which took place between 1789 and 1799. This has to be harmonized with the earth rejoicing over the humiliation of the Bible. The earth class would not fit well if it is referring to atheists.
Any opening comment on at least what are we thinking about here?
Well, we're thinking about this period of time where the 10th part of the city fell, which we think is a picture of the when the rest of Babylon will fall. It's a smaller picture at this time. I think that's usually how it's been described, and the French Revolution is picturing the great time of trouble that will end this present evil world. And I guess I'm from 1789 to the Earth. I guess I'll leave it there. I'm not quite sure about the second sentence, so I'll leave it there. Thank you.
Okay. No, that's fair enough. Good. Brother Chris.
Just to go along with Sister Molly's comment, I think the Bible comments kind of go with that thought as well. If you look it up on that particular verse, that it's not that they were always atheists. It's that they used to be under the papal influence. And so as taking into Babylon as being complete, he just says it's subdivided into 10, as it were, and then the French Revolution was like, France was like 1/10 of that, which fell. And then the verse 13, which we haven't talked about yet, it kind of is married to that, in that the 7,000 were the titles of men that fell. So they're all kind of connected there, pointing at the French Revolution in the comments book. Over.
Yes. And so very good. So, yes, I don't think anyone questions that verse 13 is the French Revolution. I haven't read any Bible students that are particularly questioning that. So how you harmonize the preceding verses that lead you to there, that's, of course, that's what each one of us has to consider. I guess my point on about the earth that quaked were the nominal Christians of France that quaked and created the revolution. That was my point. So we'll just leave it at that. Brother Chris.
The other point I'm just going to throw it out there for what it's worth is that when I first became a Bible student, one of the things, one of the very first studies that we took care of in Jerry's basement was the question of 3 days. And it was demonstrated to me from scripture that it usually refers to parts of 3 days. It doesn't have to be 72 hours, which some, like Worldwide Church of God, really stresses that the Lord knows how long 3 days is. And in reference to the Lord being in the grave and stuff, they have 72 hours exactly, and you can't veer from that. But the scriptures, when it says 3 days, can easily be demonstrated that it's parts of 3 days. And here it's after 3 days. So I'm just throwing that out for people trying to muddle through these symbols. Over.
Okay, so just in case someone wasn't following, what you were referring to when you first came out was the parts of 3 days that Jesus was in the tomb. That's what you had harmonized. Yeah, right. So you're just bringing out that it might not have to be exact. Okay, very good. All right, thank you. All right. Okay. Let's see here. We are getting late on time. Let's go ahead, though, and where did we leave off? We left off. Item number H, Brother James, could you read H? And let me see here. Why don't you just go ahead and read 1 and 2 as well there.
Verses 11 and 12. After the 3.5 years, the Bible stands upon its feet. That is like being resurrected. And then it ascends to heaven. Again, at least 2 possibilities. 1, in 1804, the great Bible society started and the Bible was made available to even the poorest of people from that time forward. Or 2, almost immediately after the English New Testaments were publicly burned, the King of England rejected Catholicism and shortly after that authorized an English Bible for every church. Thereafter, the Bible continued to be raised up. until 1804, the great Bible societies exalted them to heaven, as related before. What is the difference between these two views? The matter of how long the exaltation was. Both views have the Bible come alive immediately after the 3.5 years, but the second view has a gradual process of the Bible being raised up.
All right. Anything you'd like to start with on that, Brother James?
Well, and point number two, what it brings to my mind is in Canterbury, the English church, after that period of Bible burning, that's when you have the chained Bible. I don't know if the brethren have heard of that before, but it was ordered that in every church throughout England that the Bibles had to be chained so that they couldn't be stolen, because that's what was happening, is they were stealing Bibles out of the churches and burning them. So that's where we have that come into play. So that kind of fits in with that sentence that you had there. The King of England, I think that would have been Henry the Eighth, right? Authorizing the English Bible for every church, and that was Thomas Cromwell.
I think that's right.
Instrumental in that.
Mm-hmm. All right, very good. So sometimes it's been expressed that, like, Jesus himself was humiliated on crucifixion, publicly humiliated. Then he was laid in the tomb, and then he was raised up, resurrected, and he remained in the earth's atmosphere for 40 days. And then he went to heaven in the sight of his disciples. And so it suggested in the one view that after the terrible Bible burnings in the 1526 to 1530, that shortly thereafter, King Henry VIII literally left Catholicism and started the Church of England. But the Bibles were then more freely distributed in the common language of the people. And it was a gradual rise, like Jesus in the earth's atmosphere for 40 days before ascending to heaven. So it's a gradual rising over about 200 years. And then the 1804 Bible Society was the actual final exaltation up to heaven in the eyes of the disciples. The other view is very clear, that if the 1260 years ends in 1799, then you have a 3.5 year period of the dead bodies in the streets. You have to harmonize that with something. I don't have an event, but we do have this exaltation of the Bible Society in 1804, and we all recognize that.